Yeah, we're trying to marathon today to try to finish up the very ends of Hilchas Nid and Tefila. Oh, we will succeed. So last week we just left off talking about the Mishnah addressing the question if a person needs some assistance to go into the mikvah, can somebody hold on to them or not? So it sounds like at first glance like a pretty serious shot of a chatzitza, or perhaps even more serious than just a chatzitza. So that area that's being held on to is not really being exposed to the water. So this issue is an issue both in terms of tefillah for a woman, who's having difficulties also with tefillah scared for all of us. Anytime you talk about a pot, you talk about a cup or something, you put it in the mikvah, so unless you're going to drop it and hope for the best, so you want to hold on to it. Unless you have a basket or something, you want to hold on to it. And that in and of itself is potentially going to be a problem. So there is a machlekes hatanoim, I have two different eitzos that are given that they don't know how to get around this problem. So one suggestion is you hold on to it very loosely. Problem is, it's two problems. First of all, you may drop it if you hold it too loose. And some tanoim were concerned that if you hold it too loose, then you may end up holding it too tight. So maybe it's not the best eitzah. Another suggestion that's given is if you wet your hand beforehand, so then the water that's on your hand is considered to be part of the mikvah water, and then there really is no chatzitza. Those are the two official eitzahs that appear in the Mishnah. And if you take a look at Shulchan Aruch on page 54, so this discussion happens to be in Hilchos Tefillas Kelim, but it's really the same issue. So Shulchan Aruch writes, my book number 15, Tzarchi Akli Rafui V'yado V'shas Tefillah, that a person should be careful that the flea should be a bit loose in his hands when he's still well. Shemahat Kel V'yado V'chatzit, because if you can hold it too tight, that's going to be a problem. Fim L'chlech Yado V'mayim T'chila in Lachush. Whereas if you wet your hand beforehand, then there's nothing to worry about at all. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes both opinions on it. Both Tanoim, according to Shulchan Aruch, are accepted. Not everyone agrees this, but Shulchan Aruch paskins that either one of those two suggestions would be good. Then the Rambam just qualifies it by saying, "V'dat v'shelechlech yodav v'mei mikvah avalo v'mayim telushim." The Rambam quotes from the Mordechai that you can't just put your hands under the sink and then stick your hands into the mikvah. You have to wet your hands with mikvah water first. Which is really very questionable because the post can point out, even if you wet your hands with sink water, as soon as you put that water into the mikvah, shakha, it becomes part of the mikvah water. So what's the difference where the original source of the water was? That's a lumdish question. I hope as we both try to get around this problem. There is a Rav Yonasan and Eibeshitz. I would say you could see on the side, but probably most of us can't even see it. Mati Yonasan is a small print, which discusses the whole shah, the whole eight, how to do it. The bottom line is that meik mikrazin, if a person wets his hands, usually it's going to be the mikvah one anyway, and then they just stick the kli into the mikvah, that would be okay. Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz says a chumrah that you can't just wet your hands, hold on to the kli, and put it into the water. What you have to do is you have to wet your hands, leave your hand in the mikvah, and then put it into the hand that's still in the mikvah. Once you take your hand out of the mikvah, then it's no longer mikvah water. That's already a chumrah, that's already a chiddush. Most people don't follow that. Most people, when they're tevel kelim, so either they throw it into the basket, you have to be careful in the basket that you don't put too many kelim together, otherwise if you put in 40 pieces of silver at the same time, then the water doesn't get between them. So most people, when they're tevel kelim, they don't use the basket. They simply stick the hand in the water first, and then take it out, and then put the kli in, and that's fine. And those are machmer. You have a transfer of hands on the water, according to the machmir. But again, this is for Tefillas Kelim, and the original source for this carries over from Tefillas Adam as well. We move on now to pretty much finish the sugyas of Chatzitza. Now we move on to just all the smaller things related to Tefillah itself. So we're up to page 55. So on page 55, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam quote a whole series of different things to be aware of at the time of Tefillah. So in 55, my Rambam, number one, beginning of CD 48, there were 48 shiurim, that's the last one of them. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes, neither shetavla v'lo kavana, nor shenafal nesachamayim, or sheyodol hokeh, raising teres l'vayla. If a woman went to the mikvah without even intending to become a tahora, she just had to fall into the mikvah. Because good luck, she fell in, or chatzitza, everything. Or she went to go swimming. Her reason would tell us the Bible. She went to get cool herself off in the mikvah water. So technically speaking, the tefillah would work. There are those who require kavanah for tefillah. It's all complicated. So in the second paragraph of Chulin, we should insist on having kavanah. Again, not all that relevant. But the Moshe made it relevant. Moshe uses this in his famous tshuva, where he discusses, what if you have a couple that wasn't from, and a child was conceived, then the child becomes from 20 years later, a child wants to get married. So technically speaking, even if a child's parents did not observe Taras Mishpacha, the child is still mutter to get married. There's no mamzerus whatsoever. That's an explicit gemara in several places. But nevertheless, we shot it right. That's considered to be something that's almost like not the nicest thing. So it's considered to be a little bit of a pogam, a little bit of a something, if the child was conceived through the state of not observing Taras Mishpacha. Again, it doesn't impact the halacha. A person is permitted to marry such a person, but there are some who have a little bit of debate about that. So they used to be, even in the days of the Rishonim, they used to be careful to make sure that the child was conceived in Tahara. So Rav Moshe writes that if you have a child who's a Bal Tshuva, so you can assume that they were conceived in Tahara. What do you mean? We know the parents weren't from when they conceived in Tahara. So Rav Moshe said the stomach was a hot day. The mother must have gone to the beach one of those days. When you go figure out when she went swimming 25 years ago. So she must have gone to the beach, and it must have been punk at the time when she was able to go to the mikvah. She didn't count shivnikim. No. She didn't do vidikas. No. You're not a zava. And with their ice, you don't even need to have sektara. And with their ice, you have a babysitter now. It's only a meal. Anyway, Moshe says, when I told her everything was good, there was no kavanah for tefillahs. We passed him like you're no need kavanah for tefillah. So Moshe said, if this would have been a real halachic concern, then we wouldn't be playing these games. The whole thing is not a concern anyway. The whole thing up he did, even if you know for a fact the woman never went swimming in the last 50 years, doesn't matter. We assume she probably went swimming. Maybe she didn't go to the beach, maybe she went to the pool. The pool's also okay with their eyesight. I'm sure, no, it's Sam Shachan. Moshe writes in a few places the same tshuva, that for those who are concerned about these kinds of things, so you should just know that I can solve all your problems, that their eyes stick a level, nothing to worry about, forget about it. So he quotes this thing. Then the Rebbe quotes a series of other things relating to tefillah, the second line of the Rebbe. Those who write that a woman should be extra careful to be tzanua on the night of our tefillah. So that's the reason why the women have a practice that they daft go out of their way not to publicize that they're going to the mikvah. Not supposed to be schmoozing and telling her friends and telling her cousins and telling everybody that she's going to the mikvah that night. Anyone who has to know, the husband has to know, sometimes the rav knows, sometimes the doctor has to know. Sometimes a woman is stuck and she needs a mother's or sister's help or something, but just logistically, okay, that's whatever is necessary for the tefillah, the mikvah lady's going to know. Some people have to know. But anyone that doesn't have to know, just for the purpose of schmoozing about it, that's considered to be inappropriate, and therefore she should be careful not to go in such a tataram, not to make a whole announcement to the whole world that she's going to the mikvah. And a person who's not careful about this, who acts in an immodest way about this, I don't know where they got this from. The Rambam quotes a Rishon that quotes that pasuk. I think what the pasuk is trying, what this drasha, so to speak, is trying to say is, he acts like a behemoth. Behemoth does things in public. Behemoth mates in public. Nobody cares. Nobody looks. So a Jewish woman does things quietly, does things privately, modestly. If the person is not careful about this, that's a problem. That it is appropriate that when a woman comes out of a mikvah, so the first person who should see her should be a friend, not literally a best friend, a Jewish woman. Somebody Jewish should see her first. That the first thing that she bumps into shouldn't be a davar tamei. A little bit more up in Kabbalah than up in Allah. He quotes with the Sefer Rekeh, another Rishonim who say that if she walks out of the mikvah, the first thing she bums into is a dog, is a chayat tamei or something. She bumps into a dog when she walks out of the mikvah. So that's not a siman tov, but again, it's not a halacha. She should go back to the mikvah again. As man as that, this is not too relevant for us. She's going with the mikvah lady, so the first person who she walks into. There's no dog in the mikvah, so the first thing she walks into, the first thing she bumps into, is the mikvah lady, and we assume that that's okay. Then the Rambam at the end makes reference, Ayin lekaman, sofsu v'mishalim, the mutu lahat v'chamen the mikvah. Are you allowed to heat up the mikvah or not? This is not huchas nidashan, this is huchas mikvah shayla. So our custom is that we do heat up the mikvah. We have to figure out a way to do it better, but it's not that complicated. As long as that's even easier, we just have heat up the water. It's no big deal. In the olden days, it was much harder to heat up mikvah water, because the only way to heat up mikvah water was to take the water, add the mikvah, put it into a pot, put it in the stove, and then pour it back into the mikvah again. So you could potentially run into problems with that. But the way we do it today is very, very simple, and that's, of course, our practice that we do heat up the mikvah. On Friday night, it's a whole nother shayla about being tovel in hot water on Friday night. We used to talk about this in the past, because there's a gzeira with the rabbanan, you're not supposed to take a bath on Shabbos, even if you heated the water, but had there. So that's a question of posting, whether going to the mikvah is included in that gzeira or not. So there are different practices in different communities about this. I'm under the impression that the mikvah tzaddik is making on this. I'm sure that the water is heated on Friday night as well. And then he writes, oh, imut alirchot achot tefillah. And he says, if you take a look in other places, the Rambam talks at the end of Siman Reish Aleph about whether a woman is allowed to go back to the bathhouse, take a shower or bath, after she comes out of the mikvah. What's the issue? If she already went to the mikvah, what could be the problem? So this is a throwback to the Gemara, the first back of Masechah Shabbos. The Gemara tells us that sometimes people, not women, regular men, would go to the mikvah to be able to be tahor for the tshuva, the kachim, etc. They would go to the mikvah. The mikvahs weren't always so clean. They would go to, sometimes it would be a cave somewhere, they would go to the mikvah, and then they came out of the mikvah, and they felt a little dirty from going to the dirty water. So then they would go quickly run to the bathhouse. So over time, what happened was, people that used to be the same at the bar, they would clean themselves before going to the mikvah, take up chatzitas, go to the mikvah, and then run to the bathhouse to clean up afterwards. So over time, some people, the Amaratzim, didn't understand. They thought it's the bathhouse that's making them tahor, not the dirty, smelly cave water that's making them tahor. They thought it's the clean Roman Turkish bath that's making them tahor. So I said, what if we have to go to the dirty mikvahs? Let's go to the clean bathhouses. So over time, some of the people didn't understand it was mikvahs. They stopped using the mikvah. So Chazal wanted to stop that practice. So Chazal said that if you go to the mikvah and then you go to the bathhouse, you have to go back to the mikvah again. you have to re-matire yourself. And you can't eat shumah until you go back to the mikvah again. So that nipped that practice in the bud. So some rishonim said that same concern exists for a woman. If a woman's going to go to the mikvah, then she's going to come home and take a bath, come home and take a shower. So over time, she's going to think that it's not the mikvah that's doing the trick. Maybe it's the clean shower that's doing the trick. So therefore, part of that is there, a person shouldn't bathe, shouldn't take a shower right after coming out of the mikvah. So some Rishonim quote that Gemara said a shower. Other Rishonim say, Ein lanu chadash gezeiros. We don't have to make up new gezeiros. The Gemara says that gezeiros was made for truma. It was a chumah that was made in Hilchos truma. In the days of Chazal, they never made the gezeira by tefillas nidah. Why not? Whatever reason, they never made it. Now, 100,000 years later, we have to make up a new decree, a new gezeira. Ein lanu chadash gezeiros mitzvah. So the Ikka Migra that we paskin that this gezeira doesn't really apply for Hilchos Nidah, but there are Rishonim to say, and therefore there are more rights that we do have a practice that Chila to follow it. And therefore, we tell a woman that she should not bathe the shower right after going to the mikvah. The question is, what does it mean? What is right after going to the mikvah for another week? And until when? So there are different minhagim. There are different minhagim within this chumrah. But the whole thing is a chiddush in the first place. But within this chumrah, there are different minhagim. So there are those who have the practice that the woman doesn't take a shower, doesn't take a bath till the next morning. It should be a heck. It should be recognizable that she went to the mikvah. The mikvah is supposed to be with her, and she waits till the next morning. There are those who say, when you have to wait till the next morning, wait until you're with your husband. After she's with the husband, she wants to take a shower later in the evening. You have to with the husband. That's all. That also accomplishes the same goal. And there are those who say that the chumrah only applies in the Beis HaTefillah itself. That she shouldn't come right out of the mikvah and then jump into the shower. That's not appropriate. She goes home, and an hour late, even though her husband's not home yet, she takes a shower when she comes home. So there's nothing wrong with that. So yesh v'yesh. There are different minhagim within the minute. Within the chumrah, there are different permutations. Again, it's hard to know. Different women have different traditions from their mothers, from their grandmothers, from the Kabbalah teachers, as to exactly when this, quote-unquote, when this chumrah ends. And again, the whole thing is a chumrah b'alma. The women should follow whatever they learn from the Kabbalah classes, they should follow in terms of the details of this, the chumrah. The first time that I ever heard of this chumrah was actually from my grandmother. I was a little boy, that's all of us, just barely by mitzvah, and we went to the mikvah at Erev Yom Kippur. When I came back from the mikvah at Erev Yom Kippur, I ran into the house to go take a shower right before I came back. And I'll never forget, my grandmother thought I was crazy because I was landed from the moon. She said, you just went to the mikvah, now you're not allowed to do that. She said, that's screwed. She said, you just came out of the mikvah, you're not allowed to take a shower. I said, why not? I don't know why. She didn't know why not. She said, everybody knows that. Every woman from Europe knew, you don't come out of the mikvah and go back to the shower. But again, it's not me. I remember there was once a Kala who called me hysterical that she went to the mikvah 2-3 days before her wedding, like women go, and she comes out of the mikvah, and the mikvah lady told her that she should not take a shower till after the wedding. you can tell the mikvah lady she was more new orientation. I said, there's no such halacha. Such chumrah, maybe some have such a practice, but I said, you're not obligated to follow such a practice. Okay. There is a big discussion in the Poskim concerning the bracha that's recited when going to the mikvah. The Gemara says the Feirish that one recites a bracha when going to the mikvah. Whether you hold that the tefillah of a mikvah is a formal mitzvah, whether it's a mati, the bottom line is you make a bracha. That's for sure. The bracha is a shirk, the shirk, the shirk, the al hatfilah. Sometimes you have a situation that arises that the woman's not sure she's supposed to be going to the mikvah, but she's not even sure she was a nida in the first place. Sometimes you have situations that we had a paskin, she was a nida, it was a chumrah, we weren't sure, it was a shaila, and we had to be machmir. So like, whenever you have a suffix mitzvah to a person, it's not sure whether they have to shake a lulav. Because they don't remember that I shake the lulav, yet not shake a lulav yet, so you have to shake again. It's a suffix derais in the first day of the chumrah. The person can't remember that they hear shofar that day. So it's 3 o'clock after Rosh Hashanah, they don't remember. You can see what a good job the shofar did for them. They can't remember what they heard the shofar. So they have to blow the shofar again, suffix derais of the chumrah. Some Rishonim say you make a bracha, because since the halacha requires of you to do the mitzvah again, so you have to make a bracha on doing that mitzvah again. And other Rishonim, the way we ask and say no, that you have to recite, you have to perform the mitzvah again, but you don't recite a bracha over again. That's what our practice is. So sometimes we'll have a situation where the rabbi had a paskin that the woman is asura, we suffered, she has to go count shurikim, go to the mikvah. On the other hand, she really shouldn't make a bracha. So what do we do about that kind of situation? So there's a machlekes at Pelskim. Some Pelskim say, yeah, that's right, the same as the shofar, the lulav, tell her to go to the mikvah and not to make a bracha. And other Pelskim did it like the Yerucha Shulchan, others, right? We can't do that. A woman goes to the mikvah, she has to make a bracha. She's not going to make a bracha, that's going to spell trouble. What does that mean? So some Pelskim say, if you're going to tell a woman to go to the mikvah without making a bracha, in her mind she's going to think, well, I'm really only going as a minute. It's not a real dinner. That was only a chumrah. It's only a chumrah. I won't clean as well. I won't be so careful chatzitas. I won't do my bdikas so well. So we're afraid that if a woman gets into that mindset, if you tell a person do a mitzvah without a bracha, that leads to a zilzal. That's what the Gemara says in the end of Masech Suk, and that's the reason why Chazal instituted for Yom Tov to make brachas. Meikar did, we should eat matzah the second Seder and not make a bracha. It's like any other suffering. You should do the mitzvah without a bracha. A person does. Mikra did, we should not do malacha and not make kiddush. How can you make brachas be suffering? So the Gemara says that the reason why Chazal instituted Yom Tov Sheni with brachas is Mishum Zilzul Yom Tov Sheni. They were concerned that if you tell a person that eat matzah without making bracha, what's going to happen? They'll stop eating matzah. If you tell a person to do mitzvahs without brachas, so eventually the mitzvah will fall by the wayside. So they changed the rules in Uchaz brachas. Normally we would have expected not to make brachas in Yom Tov Sheni, but Kamash Balon Mishum Zilzul Yom Tov Sheni. So Rabbi Willing always quotes that there's only one Yom Tov Sheni where Chazal couldn't institute a bracha. That's Yom Tov Sheni of Hoshana Rabbah. The Gemara says in Sukkah, you have to eat in the Sukkah. If you live in Chutzlat, you have to eat in the Sukkah Shmini Yetzeres, because if you get to Yom Tov Sheni, it's a suffix of Shivas Yom, the Sukkah State Shivas Yom. So it's a little suffix in the Yom. Some of the Rabbanan, Mishim Suffix, whatever it is, Sveikah, Rabbanan, whatever it is, you have to eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Yetzeres. But Chazal would have wanted to make a bracha Leish in the Sukkah, but they couldn't. Why? Because since you're already making Kiddush for Shmini Yetzeres, to make Kiddush for Shmini Yetzeres and Leish for Sukkot, time to disaster. Most Yom Tov Sheni, so I observe a second night of Pesach. So what? So I observe last day Shavuos. So I dance at Simchas Torah. So what? It doesn't. There's nothing that contradicts what I'm doing. I don't know. Maybe it is Yom Tov. It's not Yom Tov. But on Shmini Yetzeres, when I have to observe Shmini Yetzeres and then turn around the same breath, make a Shmini Yetzeres Kiddush and make a Leish for Sukkot is ridiculous. So therefore, Chazal said, "You're right." They threw their hands up and said, "Hilchasa." But Mesav Yasvinim Bruchalam Brachinim. That you have to sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Yetzeres, the Gemara Paskins, Bruchalam Brachinim, but you don't make a bracha. So it's the only one of all the other Shenis that Chazal's hands were tied and we couldn't make a bracha. So we will accept that's exactly what happened. Because we don't make a bracha, therefore Zilzal, therefore all kind of different minhagim, all strange practices came. People don't eat for this reason, that means the other reason. So since we wouldn't have made a bracha, none of this would have happened. What do you want? Chazal has no choice. That's what the Yerucha Shulchan writes, the same thing, when it comes to tefillah b'mikvah. You can tell a woman to go to the mikvah and not make a bracha, who knows what's going to happen from that. So it's not a good policy. That's a shaila. Do we have a right to make up that klal? It's a hard klal for us to swallow. Chazal made up the klal. When it came to Shmini Yetzeres, we have a right today to make such a klal. I don't know. So there are different practices, different posts who have different practices about this. So When I have a case where a woman, I'm sending her to the mikvah misafek, and I know that it's not 100% sure she has to be tovel, I don't make a point of saying not to make a bracha. I'm just weary. I'm nervous about the Yerucha Shulchan. I'm not taking a stand. She'll make a bracha, all that. She will, she won't. I'm afraid to give a clear. I'm afraid to send the woman to the mikvah and tell her, oh, by the way, go to the mikvah, count shavnikim, go to the mikvah, do chafif, do everything, but don't make a bracha at the end. I think it's going to lead. I think the Yerucha Shulchan is right. It's going to lead the day of Yerucha. So I don't actively tell the mikvah. I don't do anything. Tell her, go to the mikvah. She'll make a bracha. not the, won't be the end at all. So the bracha that's recited at when a woman goes to the mikvah is should be governed by the regular rules of brachas and mitzvahs, namely that we should recite the bracha before you do the mitzvah. Make a bracha before you blow shofar. Make a bracha before you put on tefillin. Make a bracha before you read the Megillah. So a woman should make the bracha before she dunks into the mikvah. That's what the din should be. So the Gemara in the page 55 was the end of the second of Avos. So the Gemara says that Tali Rabbi Hachi Tovo ba'ola ba'liyasa oma bracha she'kishar mitzvah tzvah al tefillin. The Gemara says when a person is tovo in the mikvah, so when they come out of the mikvah, when they finish tovoing, then they recite the bracha. Why is that? So Tosfos quotes a big machlokes. Why is that so? Why mechatesi you should change the order? So on page 55 in the bottom piece, Tosfos quotes Omer ve'elchanal b'shem agon davka betfilas ger. That the Gemara is not talking about tefilas neither. The Gemara is talking about tefilas gerim. So tefilas gerim, I understand why they have to make the bracha afterwards. The lo chazik kadum tefila because they can't make the bracha before. The lo matzlameim v'tzivanu. How in the world does the non-Jew slash convert make a bracha asher kedishan mitzvahs etzvanu yakati nachriu? He's a guy. He doesn't become Jewish until he comes out of the water. So therefore, Chazal had no choice. The hands were tied, and you have to recite the bracha the tefillas geirus after you come out of the mikvah, because to say it before would be totally inappropriate. The person can't say asher kedishan mitzvahs etzvanu. However, Tosfos quotes from Ben Chanano, aval shar chay b'tefila, going about carry the chayetz b'muta levar. Says if a man's going to the mikvah in the olden days when it was a chiyav, or a woman's going bizman hazeh, says like why in the world shouldn't you recite the bracha before? It's the same as any other mitzvah before you put on tefillin, before you read the begil, before you mouth, you make a bracha. So before the woman goes under the water, she should recite a bracha. That's the opinion that the Tosfos quotes. And then 3 lines into the Tosfos. The Ri says that we shouldn't change the practice of the women who recite the bracha after they come out of the mikvah. Why? Because since every once in a while you have to recite the bracha of tefillah after the tefillah, namely in the case of tefillah's ger, so we want uniformity in brachas. The practice should be you walk into the mikvah. Water first, bracha afterwards. So even though, you're right, 99.9% of the time the mikvah is used for tefillas nashim, but since 1% is used for tefillas anashim, we don't want to get into confusion. The standard protocol of brachas and tefillah always is tefillah first, bracha afterwards. That was the reason that the Ri gave. Again, it's a very, very big chiddush, but that's what the Ri writes was the practice.
Is this ended by Kalim?
Oh, except for tefillas Kalim, it's a different bracha, so it doesn't bother us.
Tefillas Kalim,
even though it's a mikvah, it's a different bracha, right? Right, so there are 2 different practices about this. Machlok is the Mechav and the Ramah. Machlok is the Sfarim and the Ashkenazim until this very day, what the practice should be. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes what seems to be the simpler understanding, quotes from the Rabbah and the Gaonim and from the Reb Chanan. The first opinion tells us that when a woman goes to the mikvah, she recites the bracha first. So she's standing in the mikvah, she's about to go under, recite the bracha, and then goes under the water. The same as before shofar, before matzah, before tefillin, take any other mitzvah. And the Ramah quotes the opinion of the Ri quotes that the practice was of Ashkenazi women, that is still the practice until today, that our practice is that the women recite the bracha dafka after they come out of the mikvah rather than before they go under. So then the Ramah quotes that because it's a little bit of a shaky practice, it's really, the Ikra Din and the Chav sounds like it's really more correct, so we have another practice that the Ashkenazi women have, is that they first go under the water, then they come out, and then they recite a bracha, and then they go down a second time. What do they gain by going down a second time? Because that way it's a little bit overlas yasa. Brachas are supposed to be before you do mitzvahs, so even though we can't really do it because of this concern with a little plug, we don't want to mix up people for tefillas kayim, tefillas gerim. So therefore, we have a practice that we do a double tefillah. So the woman goes under the water first, before reciting the bracha. Then she recites the bracha, and when she comes out, she goes back under a second time.
That's a minute now?
That's a minute today. Yeah, that's a minute. Ashkenazi custom is today.
Is that one of the 613 mitzvahs?
What, tefillah itself?
Yeah.
Well, it's counted as a mitzvah. The question is it a formal mitzvah, or is it not a mitzvah? You don't want to do it, so don't do it. You want to remain tummy for the rest of your life.
Because obviously men can't do it.
Right. Well, men in the old that, we don't recite a bracha. That's the tefillah that men do today. It's not me agree that it's if a man lived in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and he went to the mikvah to eat the karbanos, to eat truva, then he would recite a bracha. The reason why we don't make a bracha is it's not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. We don't need it for anything. So our practice is that women do recite the bracha, and they recite the bracha in Ashkenazi communities in between the two tefillas. So the poskim raise a question about this custom. It doesn't really seem to make any sense, because the second tefillah is not really accomplishing anything. Once a person is already tahora, so she's tahora already 400 times. The second tefillah is meaningless. So it's really almost like a symbolic way of, like, almost like a make-believe over Lassi Yosan. It's not really accomplishing anything. So some poskim have a very chushtik thing. We should tell the woman that she should go the first time ala tanai. She should have in mind when she goes into the water the first time that if the Shulchan Aruch is right, and I really have to have the bracha before the tefillah, so the tefillah shouldn't take effect. And if the Ramah is right, then the tefillah should take effect. So this is not a good idea. First of all, most poskim say tanai doesn't work for tefillah. Remember, we learned if a person falls into the water, she went swimming 20 years ago on the beach, she didn't even know she was going to the mikvah, she becomes tahorah. Tefillah is not, it's not like the kiyush shofar. I'm only being yotzei such and such. I'm eating the matzah a lot tonight. It doesn't exist by tefillah. If tefillah is matzah, the woman is matar, the woman's matar, finished. So the matzah / mitzvah is over. So most of the posts say this tonight doesn't work. Also, it's confusing. It mix a person up. So I don't think anybody makes this tonight as matzah. I think the women do follow what their rabbi writes, and they go to the tovel first, then they come up, and then they recite a bracha, and then they go back down again and shut. And then, as an added thing, there's a minig in our communities that we do a third tefillah also. What do you do a third tefillah for? It has nothing to do with Hilchos Brachos. That's a general. The Mishnah says in Maseches Menachos that when you want to do something for emphasis, you do it three times. So the Mishnah says when they used to cut the Omer in the Beis HaMikdash, so they would ask the person who was cutting and say, is this the Omer? He would say, yes. They would say, yeah, yeah. Three times they would do everything to show that we're really doing it with seriousness. So that's the source for why a lot of things that we do, we repeat three times. Like when we do a Taras Tadarim, so we say a Kol Machlach three times. Do it three times. You said already a Kol Machlach. You say you're Matan Nedarim. You say the whole thing three times. So that's also based on that. The different things in the davening sometimes we do three times. Yeshiva Shomala, we say, you know, Matu, all the Haramim, Erev Yom Kippur, Yeshiva Shomala, we say it three times.
They say it three times.
Kol Mavasa, yeah, that's already.
But when men go to a mikveh, they also go three times.
So yeah, it's the same thing.
Same thing.
It all comes from that. So again, so the one time is the din, the second time is because of Hilchos Brachos, and the third time is just liyasasays. For those who follow the practice of the Ari HaKadosh says you have to have seven times. Those are two versions. Some say seven, some say 39. I always tell people when they go to the Ari's mikvah, I said you don't have to drive the whole world behind you crazy. There are 100 people waiting to go to the mikvah. This guy's holding his chumras. He's struggling 100 times. They say the joke with the nuts and the chassid and the misnagid. The chassid goes to the mikveh seven times, so he goes into the mikveh, then he comes out, he says, L'shem Micha, he goes back again, he comes and says, Perkadilim, he goes back again, everything with kavan, he says, Vaislach, each tefillah. The misnagid, when he goes seven times, he goes under the water, and he sticks his little finger up, because once part of your finger is out of the mikveh, so the tefillah is no good. So he goes, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, seven, up. If he didn't, he went into the mikveh seven times, and he didn't even have to lose his breath. So again, the standard minhag, at least in Ashkenaz communities, is that it's three times. And again, the second time was in terms of this issue, in terms of Hilchos Brachos.
So she makes the bracha the second time she does that?
She goes between the first and the second time. That's what women use. That's what Ashkenazi women usually make the bracha. Sephardi women make the bracha right before they go under the first time. Once a woman called me from the mikveh, very, very upset. A Sephardi woman called me. She's been married for 20 years, and she said that she always made the bracha like his father with the shalach and the Rambam say before she goes under the water. And the mikvah lady told her that this is an Ashkenazi mikvah. It's not a new mikvah lady. This is an Ashkenazi mikvah, and our practice is to do it this way. You have to follow our practice. So the woman called me hysterical. She was so upset. So I said, you can tell. I don't think it wasn't one of my mikvahs. I told her you can tell her that you asked your rabbi, and the rabbi told you that going to the mikvah is not like davening for the yomid. I said, you're not obligated to follow the minhag hamakom in terms of that. If the mikvah has certain standards in terms of chatzitzas and things like that, okay, so then some different mikvahs have different standards about those things. Some mikvahs have the standard of these kinds of things that say, ask your rabbi. If your rabbi tells you it's okay, we're not going to end up second guess your rabbi. Other mikvahs will not let you go down if it's something that doesn't meet the criteria of the post of that mikvah. When it comes to the minig of when to make the bracha, I said, if it's your minig is to make the bracha before, so you make the bracha before and finish. Many of the mikvahs have the bracha written on the side of the mikvah. They should be careful not to write Shem Hashem on it, because if they have the Shem Hashem, so then you're not supposed to stand there undressed. So they write Hashem with the Hey Elokeinu instead of the Shem Hashem itself. said, one of my boys years ago, this little, I took him to the mikveh of Yom Kippur. So I heard him making the bracha. I said, what are you making a bracha for? He says, oh, it says on the wall. It says, make a bracha before you go in. So that wasn't for him, so I had to cover that up for Yom Kippur for the men. Probably not the only one who made that mistake, I imagine. Probably many men who made the bracha. They followed the Psadigot. Psadigot says, if you're going to make a Yom Kippur, you should make a bracha. So the Rosh disagrees, and I'm going to get knocked away. So in 1,000 years, nobody's made a bracha until my kid made a bracha. Okay. There is a whole discussion about when a woman makes a bracha going to the mikvah. So there's a whole shaila about if she's not dressed, you're not supposed to generally make brachas in the state of not being dressed. So how do you solve that problem? So there are actually two different problems. So there's one problem is that just the fact that there's an erev, a makom erev is exposed, whether it's yours or somebody else's, that's the problem. And number two, even if the makom erev is covered, there's a lot of what's called viva rosa erev, that there's not supposed to be an open area between your heart and your makom erev, and that's to be separation between the two. So normally a person happens to make brachas, neither of those problems exist. A person's dressed, and the makom erev is covered over. In the olden days, so a person would wear, like the Romans, well, the tunics, they wore, you know, the one long coat, so then you have to put on a belt. You have to put a gartel before davening, because otherwise there's going to be no separation between your lav and your erva. That's the gemara at the end of the third brand of brachas. So Tosis on the spot quotes that doesn't apply bizman hazeh. There's no need to wear gartel bizman hazeh because we wear belts, so we have underwear. We don't wear long coats anymore. So we have other things that separate. So either person has a little belt or they have the elastic of their underwear. There's a separation between the two. So there's no requirement that we need to wear gartel bizman hazeh. There are some who have the practice of wearing a gartel for two reasons. Either as a throwback to the old days, when it was real din, you had to wear a gartel. Or the Gemara says in the Sefer Shabbos that a person is supposed to put on a special beged, put on something nice for davening, something above and beyond your regular clothes as a sign of cover for davening. So others say, from the gartel, from the jacket, from the hat, from the tie, from the whatever, something else. So the whole idea of putting on a gartel was only for two reasons. And either the reason of libos or erva, which doesn't apply, or because of putting on a special beged, which doesn't apply either. But another beged doesn't have to be halachos has to be a gartel. That's why in outside of the Chassidish outside of that community, so most of us don't wear gartels because the reasons that appear in the Gemara don't apply.
Also Chassidim today, they go to
mikvah all the time. Right, that's right.
They go many times.
Right. So for women, one of the problems exists, and the other one probably doesn't exist. The Tosfos right that when a woman goes to the mikvah, she has to make sure that her erva is covered over, but that can be covered over being in the water. So if she's standing in the water and the erva is under the water, so it's like almost like a different rishus, so that's not a problem. What about the issue of liba roasa erva? So she's all the way in the water, and she's standing up her neck in the water, and her body, her heart, and her bottom part are in the same area. Isn't that a problem? So many of the Tosfos can say that the din of libros erva doesn't apply for a woman, just because of biologically that the woman's erva is a lower area. It's not mamish keneged halev. So just the way the anatomy is that the Shach and the Taz argue that there's really no problem altogether with libros erva, not as exposed, not as in direct line of contact, of visual contact with the heart, and therefore Chazal never made the prohibition for women. That's what the practice is that many women have, that when they make the brachas in the mikvah, so they're not so careful about libros erva, and they're standing in the mikvah, and as long as their erva is covered by the mehem mikvah, and even though it's in the same area as libam, so many people assume that's not a problem. There are others who have a practice that the woman puts a towel, she takes a towel, and she wraps the towel underneath her heart, a little bit of a separation, so like a gartel a little bit. So it shouldn't be a shayla of libros erva. I don't know for sure. I don't know what the minigan and different mikvahs are. Some have their practice, some don't have their practice. The ikur din is that it's not a problem. As long as if she's standing mamish undressed, standing outside the water, that's a problem. But because then the erva itself is exposed. But if she's under the water and the erva is covered, it's just an issue of libros erva. So the ikur din, according to many poskim, that would impose a problem.
What's the minigan over here?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the minigan is. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that when a woman comes back from the mikvah, so before she goes to her husband, so she should inform her husband that she went to the mikvah. Not that we doubt, not that we're questioning, not that we don't trust her, But the halacha is that since she had a cheskas iser until that point, until that point she couldn't be with us, and now she becomes muteres. So in order to establish that any cheshashas that she didn't go to the mikvah, so she's supposed to officially report that she went to the mikvah. She's supposed to say tavalti, that she went to the mikvah. She doesn't have to say b'zeh haloshon, that tavalti, you know, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. She doesn't say the words tavalti. She could say, I went, she came back, finished. As long as she says some kind of verbal statement. So many poskim question whether this is even true. Many poskim say that she doesn't have to literally verbalize it. She comes home, so it's understood. She comes, can't make some physical contact with her husband. So it's obvious, of course, she went to the mikvah. What's there to be concerned with? So there are some who don't follow this practice. But the poskim, you should follow. The more correct thing is that she should come back from the mikvah. She should say, I went to the mikvah and finish. I always tell the chassanim that just be careful that if you learned this halacha, the woman didn't learn, if your kala didn't learn this halacha, she comes back from the mikvah and you say, did you go? You know, you make a whole fuss about it, she's going to get very taken aback. So just use common sense sensitivity in terms of this. So they should decide whatever policy they're following. If they're following those who insist that she has to formally say tavalti, or whatever other equivalent for that is, then that should be the practice. She should know that she comes back from the mikvah. The first thing she should say to her husband is, I went to the mikvah, finish. And those who don't follow this or following those posts can more make all that if it's so obvious and clear from what she's acting in such a way, so then we can assume that she did go to the mikvah. So we did do a little bit of a rush in some of the last couple of pages, but I think we can say we did make a siyum. So Hashem, I think it took us 2 years to finish Hilchos Nida. So I guess we'll have to reconvene after the summer to figure out what the next
is. We're going to do part four.
Part one we did already. Part one was last year.